Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage. I'm Tor Norby from the Android Tools team.
I like how your voice cracked there. Like, I think it's finally changing. That's nice. I'm Jed Haas from the UI Toolkit team. And today we have...
Effie. I work for Pinterest.
Do you have a last name?
I have a last name. Effie Barak.
Okay. And what do you do for Pinterest?
I work on the performance team, making our app faster.
Oh, excellent. Then that's yet another thing we're going to talk about today. So we're taking a slight deviation today to talk to a developer that does not work at Google. Effie obviously is at Pinterest, which means she's not at Google. To be honest, we don't talk to mostly Google developers because that's our policy. It's just easier because those people sit down the hall from us. And it's easy to schedule someone into a local studio that happens to be local. But I was talking to Effie after a recent conference, after the 360 end of conference, and realized she works in the Bay Area. So she came into the studio to talk about some Android internals. But first, give us a bit of context. So you're at Pinterest now, you're working on performance. What kind of background have you had in development or Android development or speaking at conferences about the way stuff works?
That is a very broad question.
Yes, it is.
So I'm a developer for maybe like 10 years. I used to work on stuff that were mostly on the Microsoft .NET stack. And maybe 2 years ago, I switched to Android. Been working on Android ever since. I've worked for Udemy, which is an online courses platform. And after that, I moved to Pinterest 4 months ago.
Okay, so for Udemy, were you developing the courses? Were you writing apps? Were you teaching the courses?
Was it writing all of that? The Android app.
Okay, all right. So 2 years from not knowing Android to talking about how the internals work.
Yes.
That's a good story for everybody. See, everybody can do this. So, all right. So why don't we hear a little bit about the internals talk that we have alluded to then. So you were at 360 Andev. You had a talk titled, what?
Android internals for developers.
That sounds appropriate. And it covered, well, why don't I let you explain it?
It's an overview of the entire operating system. And that came basically after I realized that how little do I know about Android, the Android operating system. I read this book about the Linux operating system and basically realized that I don't know anything about Android and how does it work. So obviously I decided to talk about it because that's what you do with something you have no idea about.
Speaking of that, didn't Diane write a chapter for Tannenbaum's operating system book? Am I just imagining this?
No, she did. That was like 3-ish years ago, I think.
Yeah, so maybe one chapter in the book you read might have been on Android, but it's a very large operating system, so I can totally imagine there's a lot more to cover.
So yes, after sort of asking around what resources are available on the Android operating system, I was referred to this chapter, and I actually used it a lot. It's very, very good.
Mm-hmm. We should link to that in the show notes. Yeah, I totally forgotten about that. The interesting thing to me in watching your talk was not only is there not much information externally on how stuff works, there's like zero information internally. It is stuff that you pick up by working on the system. Either as an app developer, you know, you tend to go deeper over time and you learn these things by talking to people, osmosis, working with them, whatever. Or even internally, like I'm working on the framework team for the last 7.5 years. And so I was acquainted with much of the stuff that you talked about just because it comes up eventually in your work. But there's nothing that we have internally even to say, here's how things work, right? Because you kind of have your own job to do. You don't really focus on necessarily the overview.
Right. So I had to really dig fairly deep to find out this stuff. I mean, it is open source, so technically you can read the source code.
So I have a question about that, because often when I'm digging in the framework source code, there'll be a bug ID. But those bugs aren't publicly available, are they? Like, when you were doing this digging, I assume you looked through the Git history, right?
Not really. I just cloned the repo and started sort of figuring out the way of how can I actually navigate through the source code. Mm-hmm. That was not an easy task as it may sound.
No, I believe it. There's this IntelliJ project that gets passed around from engineer to engineer for how to load the Android framework into IntelliJ so that things work. I think I got my copy from Jed actually back in the day.
I got mine from Romain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I actually asked Romain, and he did not remember what kind of extra fixes he did on top of just running the IDE gen.
Yeah.
And then I had to dig around and find some very old blog posts from external people who done that. And
I think IDE gen has been worked on recently, but at least when I got here, it was ossified. It included and excluded a whole bunch of obsolete stuff. And so we just kind of ignore that output. You start from a vanilla and you just keep adding and subtracting stuff until it does the thing that you want. And then you pass that project to someone else when they start. So now you can pass your project along.
That's right.
So were you actually doing step debugging through the code to help figure it out? Or was it just like all sucking it up through reading it?
A little bit of both. It turned out that that was also like a huge task and very easy to get lost. Apparently, the source code of an operating system is very big.
I've heard that.
Complex. So I did a little bit of both. I both debugged into it and I also read a lot of it. I also tried to talk to people who are on these teams and have asked questions and have them maybe show me around a code base. I pinged some Googlers. Some of them didn't know me before.
And do they know you now?
I would say yes.
Yeah.
And they helped me figure stuff out. Some of it, I guess, another thing that was a challenge is that even though AOSP is an open source project, it's not really. I mean, it gets released after the actual release has been out.
I call it eventual open source.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah, we don't release the in-process stuff. It's more, you know, when the product is done, then we'll release the next version.
Yeah. So I heard more than once something like, I don't remember how this went, like how was this code structure? And we've been working on O for a year now or X amount of time.
Yep. There's also a wall internally that we hit with some of the source code repository where you're like, wow, when did this change enter in? Why does this code work like this? And a lot of the code was copied over from another system at some point in time. It's like, you know, what's the epic? Right. It's the beginning of time where there was a whole bunch of changes that came in on the same day. And whenever
2008,
you hit that date,
there's this massive everything in the source tree eventually gets back to that line. So if that's the thing you need, you're kind of out of luck.
Yep.
Another thing with speaking to Googlers is that everybody knew their own little bit of something that they do, like you mentioned earlier, and not a whole lot of them had a sort of more of a broad perspective over the entire piece that I was trying to investigate.
Like, give an example of a piece that you investigated.
So, for example, I wanted to trace what happens in the on the system side when a new app is instantiated, started, created.
The whole zygote and all that.
Yeah, and also like how system server responds or acts.
I think the older a system is, the harder it is to figure out why things were done, because people forget. Starting apps is pretty old.
Yeah, that's kind of fundamental. That would have been there forever, basically.
And also a lot of edge cases have been added on top of it over the years. Right. What if you start an activity, but it's not visible? What if you start a bunch of activities? What if you start,
want an activity to activity transition?
Yep.
So there's a lot of edge cases. And the tree is very complex, so finding just like the main route of, I just want to see how an activity gets created, how an activity record gets created, how we send a message to zygote to fork, how all these like very basic, straightforward path was not so easy to track down.
So this... It's, you know, if you did a talk about Android internals, it seems like that should have been like a year-long talk. But I'm assuming you didn't talk for that long.
It could have gone.
Yeah. So how long was it and what did you focus on?
The talk was 45 minutes. And
she talked really, really quickly, though.
And yes, every topic that I covered there could have been months and months of talking all on its own. What I tried to do was give a very broad overview of the operating system and cover every little bit just to give people sort of a map, maybe, so later they can dive into maybe more specific areas.
So overview, like, can you rattle off like the main areas that you tried to...
So I started off with talking about the kernel and the init process. And then I talked about Zygote and how is it special, what makes it special, what makes processes in Android special about the user IDs being unique. Then I covered about more about the system server and the more Java-y parts of it, and the application manager and the package manager and the window manager, just trying to cover those three bits a little bit to show developers how their apps are being affected or managed by these components.
I think the most interesting thing to me is like the unique aspect of your talk and the topic is that there is really no obvious reason why people would know this unless they're, you know, diving deep into the internals, because there is no API surface there, right? These are the implementation details of how the system works, as opposed to like there are a bunch of people that know how, I don't know, UI thread stuff works or performance aspects or whatever, because they're like dealing with the APIs that they need to or the tools that they need to get to it. And so they can get their head around it. But otherwise, you're not going to know how an activity launches internally unless you look at the internal code, right?
Right. There's no sort of a bridge. And even the stuff that maybe, and I mentioned this in my talk as well, if you want to go and see how the operating system works, for example, how the application manager works, and you're looking at stuff like creating a new activity, at some point you'll reach the wall of the binder, basically, and you will not be able to see beyond that as to the actual source code. So as a developer, if you don't have AOSP and you cannot actually look at the actual code that's happening, you cannot just navigate to source, and then...
Right. Yeah, then you're going to hit that interface through which, you know, it jumps over a wall and there's an RPC on the other side that handles it somewhere. Like even on the inside, even when you have, you know, the magic project that Romain gave you and you have the code available, it's still not trivial to sort of jump through that wall. Like you can end up, you kind of need to know where you're going to find the code, right? So even having AOSP, like, yeah, it's good that it's there and you can do some searches for, you know, method names and eventually find your way there, but it's not trivial.
Right. So without actually asking questions and running around during Google I/O trying to find all the teams and ask everybody all the questions, it is very hard to just figure it out by yourself. There's some...
These would have been some really good fireside chat questions, I have a feeling.
Those are the ones that are really fun,
yes.
Right? Because then, you get to have an interesting technical discussion about why something works.
When you were doing this investigation, was there anything you came across you thought, huh, that's dumb, they should fix that, or I want to fix that?
That is a very complex question.
You don't have to be polite. No one listens to this.
I would say more in the generic terms of what is dumb is maybe the way it's obscured and hard to get to. And that's maybe where I try to maybe step in a little bit and try and bridge that gap. I do think that developers need to know about these things, even if they don't use them on a day-to-day basis. So for a few reasons, some of them they might encounter, like some maybe Zygote-related exceptions or some maybe things that are related to the binder, like creating that sort of AIDL interfaces and things like that are things that developers are doing. And the other thing that I noticed was, like I said, how complex the code base was, which, again, I know there's no way around that because it's like there's a lot of stuff happening in an operating system. But what I would like to see is maybe it being sort of refactored or arranged in a way that makes it more readable and more approachable.
Interesting. I'm not sure we have a good answer for that. I think a lot of what you're experiencing is basically this is what you end up with when a very small number of people write a lot of code really quickly and then focus on getting things to work as opposed to making it readable or approachable, because that wasn't the goal.
Plus, I think the risk involved in making major changes is very high.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I'm going to make this code cleaner. And then potentially there's some new race condition that could occur in rare scenarios that causes devices to crash. The upside is very small, even though I agree that making the code readable is there, but I think that's really the biggest problem, right? You're really afraid to touch this code, so you touch it in the most minimal way you can when you get a bug report.
I mean, I think the code, especially the bits that you're talking about now, like I know Window Manager codes, they've been working on that a lot in recent releases to do that kind of refactoring. And I think the main reason for that is not because it makes it more approachable for other developers, because again, that's not really the goal. The goal is to write the operating system. But because as the team grows, you need other people to be able to actually work with the code, and they don't necessarily know how that 10,000 line method works or why. And so you try to restructure it. The people that know how it works try to restructure it so that other people can actually help maintain it. But it is really tricky, especially the bits that you were looking at. Like I've looked at some of those methods before, like they are monolithic methods for a reason. Like it needs to lock everything down and know that it's locked down. You can't have, you know, random methods being called from other random methods, because then you can't guarantee that all the bits are locked at the point where you need them to be, you know, as you're moving windows around or deleting tests or whatever it is. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that it could be structured more nicely. I'm just trying to picture a future in which that actually becomes a priority for the team, and I'm having a hard time.
I've heard more than once a Googler say, this is what I know, for example, about Activity Manager. Mm-hmm. Ask Diane Hagborn if you want to know more. Yeah. I heard that phrase.
That's always a very safe answer, because Diane will know.
Yeah.
Yep. When you say, like, not many people have the broad view, she is one of those very few people that does have the broad view, because she wrote a lot of that broad view, right? At least, even if she hasn't written, you know, the major portions of things recently, as the code and the team has expanded, she did write a lot of the fundamentals on that side that it's all built upon. So, yeah, that's a good answer, actually. That's a really good, I don't know a better one. But it also explains why there's not a lot of effort put toward, you know, refactoring and making it pretty, because there are very few people like that that could do
but
that.
But I don't want to, you know, waste your time.
Right.
So I do spend a lot of time source code archaeology. And that's why I brought up the issue earlier with bug IDs, is that I have found in some cases you can look at a CL and you can look at the commit message and it's still not entirely evident, but then there's that helpful bug ID sometimes. And being able to like jump into the bug tracking system and see what this was fixing, and you get a lot more discussion there, and that's sometimes helpful. But that's probably hard, because I think that these bugs are not available from the outside.
We really intend the code to be kind of like a really riveting mystery novel.
Yes.
Right? Where, you know, there are some pieces that you're just never going to know. You know the author has a big backstory there, but you're not allowed to know it. It's very tantalizing.
Well, at least then you get these interesting talks. You know, have you thought of writing a book?
That is a very daunting task.
Yes, yeah. It is.
Yeah. Chet is a published author. Multiple books.
Is another thing that explains why that doesn't exist right now, because basically the team is focused on doing the thing as opposed to taking a step back and writing about the thing. Just because that is a lot of effort that I think most engineers feel would be better spent continuing to make the system work.
There are some books on internals. Most of them focus on the more maybe lower parts.
Yeah, the kernel.
Yeah, the kernel, the file system, things like that. There's not a lot of documentation written on the system server. And
right. I mean, part of the problem is like the size of the audience. I agree that most developers would benefit from knowing this stuff, but I think the number of developers that actually want to spend the effort to learn this is probably quite small, as opposed to the number of developers that want to know more about how the APIs work or how a particular domain in Android works, like, you know, learning more about whatever it is, animations or graphics or media or UI or server interaction, whatever. Like, those are the areas that they play with in their application. Therefore, they know they need to learn more about it, as opposed to an internal one. I think that's more like luxury reading and luxury learning for developers.
You know, unless you make the case on the cover of the book that this is going to make their apps more performant, right? Which I assume is why you started this whole investigation, because you said you worked on performance issues at Pinterest.
I wasn't working on performance issues back then. I started the quest out of curiosity.
I see.
And sort of this is where I try to keep my talk at, like, not dive into really specific, obscure, I don't know, internals knowledge that was like very deeply hidden and did not seem to be interesting for developers. I wanted to keep the talk and whatever I was covering something that developers could relate to and would say, oh, I should know this in my life, even if I'm not using it exactly right now.
Speaking of those things, was there anything that you came across that you were really delighted by or surprised or, you know, some sort of aha moment that you remember?
I liked the out-of-memory killer and the out-of-memory mechanisms that Android has.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about it. I think RV wrote that. I think I remember heard something about that.
Out-of-memory. I mean, I know the task management stuff when resources are running down and it starts. I mean, it has heuristics for killing the tasks that are not as important.
Actually,
right?
Tell us more about
it. Is that it? Or?
Tell us more about it.
So it has two parts. One of them sits in the kernel level, which is the actual like task that kills other processes. And the other part sits in the activity manager. The activity manager scores your applications and it scores the processes.
Right.
And then the kernel itself is responsible.
I think I have your book cover right now. Right, how to do SEO for the task manager. Because you said that, you know, if it scores the activities, maybe you could give tips on how to make your activity score higher so it's less likely to be killed.
I don't think that is something that developer has any...
Trying to help you sell books here.
any influence on.
Well, what are the... Do you remember what the what causes a score to go up? What are the factors?
So, for example, system server is very... Okay. I app, you don't want to kill
that
yourself.
Just seems like, write a system server. Okay.
Yeah, that just seems cheating.
You don't want to kill yourself. Even though, from what I understood from some Googlers, at some extreme cases, it will kill off some parts and restore them later if it's like really starving.
Okay.
Another thing that will never be, or I cannot say never, but will unlikely to get killed is the activity that is resumed right now.
Okay.
Also important for the user experience.
Yeah, totally.
And there are other heuristics, for example, if your activity is running in a background service, but for example, it is a background service that is doing something that the user perceives, such as play music or download something or things like that, then it, again, will get a little bump to make sure it doesn't get killed off.
All right. So stay alive, just keep an open internet connection and draw a couple of bytes every few seconds. Someone's going to do this.
Who are you? You are not allowed on this podcast. I haven't looked at the code, but like recency has something to do with it. I assume the amount of memory that these tasks are taking up is another big portion, right? If you're consuming tons of memory and you're running in the background, someone's going to come looking for you.
So the kernel will, as far as I understand, right? And the kernel will just kill off anything below a certain watermark. And then be like, is it enough memory? Did I free enough memory? And if not, it will go up to the next level.
Yeah.
So if you are the foreground topmost activity and you're using a lot of memory right now, as long as there are other processes to kill, you will not be the one killed.
Right.
Even though you're, I don't know, using tons of it.
All right.
Also, like to answer Thor, your question, I don't think you would need or want these tricks to stay alive longer. I mean, as long as you design your app correctly to...
Right, the system should do the right thing and basically serve the user.
Yeah, you should let the system do what it's good at. And you should, I guess, be prepared for eventualities of your app dying.
Okay.
That's also one of those areas, like if there actually was some system that could be gamed, that system would change as soon as someone realized it.
Yeah.
The system is going to do what it needs to maintain equality for everybody running on it.
I mean, this is for a good reason, right? It's for a good cause. It's to make sure the user can keep on using their phone and opening new apps and navigating between apps.
Yep.
If your app takes a lot of resources and doesn't die, that means the user gets a not good experience using their phone. So
right.
So back to Tor's earlier question. So now that you have all this internals knowledge, and then you started working on performance. Do the two relate?
Yes, because now I can do things like run the Pinterest app and see what the operating system does in response to it. On the other hand, I cannot change the operating system, so...
Right, but at least you understand more about what's going on. So are you looking at SysTrace output to see what's going on?
Yes.
Okay, and so does the internals knowledge help you understand that non-trivial UI?
Yes, definitely.
In what ways?
For example, now I have more context about things like what is the binder, for example, that I didn't know earlier, or like what is involved with initializing a new activity or a new UI component or a new window and things like that.
Nice. So people should learn how the entire operating system works so that they can understand SysTrace. I like it. That's a motivator.
Well, it definitely is a practical outcome.
Yep. Yep.
Right? Because that is going to make your app faster if you can optimize for it. But if you open SysTrace today, you'll see one thread, and that's your application. There's all these other threads doing things, yeah. And you're not really sure why.
Actually, unfortunately, you won't see that thread that's your application, because what you'll see is the top of the UI, which has a bunch of stuff about CPU frequency, and then it has like other system processes, and it has like many processes and threads. And then eventually in there, you'll find yours. And that's really where you want to start. But the more you understand about the rest of the stuff going on, so your app may be slowed down not because of the direct thing that it was doing, but because of the indirect request that it made of the surface flinger process or whatever, some binder call.
Exactly. Right. So that's where I think it comes more into play, this knowledge. And I also think that it gives you like a more holistic view of the maybe the thing that you're playing with, like the phone that you're writing to. It gives you a holistic view into why, for example, it answered questions for me, like why can't a mobile app act like a computer program, or why do I even get all these restrictions about having only one activity and then one activity resumed, or having someone else kill off my processes or stop my activities, or why does it even need to be managed by the system and not me as a developer?
So once we push the O source code, you can update your talk to include Treble. I don't know if you had a chance to listen to our last podcast, but you know, there's this pretty big change to the system with Project Treble that I think, you know, might be interesting to hear more about as well.
Sure. I will have to look into it.
She'll dig into it once the source code's available.
Yeah, I wonder how much that would change the stuff that you were looking into. I mean, to some extent, it's below the level of a lot of the stuff that you were looking into. It's more at the kernel driver level.
In that interview, but I just listened to it. I think he said that it sort of sits next to all three layers. It's below the kernel, next to it, and above it.
Yeah,
right, for different parts. So at least the above parts, I think, would be interesting to you.
Separate from things like, you know, the task manager and the window manager and stuff like that, at the lower level, especially with services like graphics that actually need drivers talk to drivers, and they're going to be talking through, you know, Treble interfaces.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, something else to learn, if nothing else. And then you could write the book about Treble as well, because I doubt we're writing that either.
Maybe you should.
She's not wanting to commit to that book,
yeah.
But at least the talk.
Talks are easier than
they are. This is why I do talks now as well. We'll talk later. I'll tell you exactly how much work goes into a book, and then you can decide
and how profitable they are.
Yeah, unfortunately. So moving on. So performance. So you use SysTrace. What else do you do to improve performance, or what are common problems that you have in your apps?
So in Pinterest, in general, we take a very data-driven attitude towards solving problems. And so our first priority as the performance team has been to create a set of tests that can be run regularly after every commit, and make sure that our measurements, the way we define them, and we define them as the sort of like the user experience, some common actions that they do, stay the same and don't regress.
Awesome. How do you measure it?
So we are using a service called NimbleDroid that runs certain scenarios and measures them for us. We tell it it's an espresso test that run in on their server, I don't know, hundreds of times on certain phones, and does an average of how long this operation take, and it also gives us feedback back about what operations took longer, what slowdowns did the system have, and things like that.
So then you see that something regressed I mean, so there's two things to be aware of, at least. One is regressions that you've injected in the code, but that assumes that the code that you had was already good enough, right? And then the other one is just, are we good enough?
Well, we got to start. We got to start with some sort of baseline, which is what we did to start with. We wanted to make sure that whoever else commits new code or creates new features or refactors something doesn't regress whatever baseline we have right now, because then we'll be just working against ourselves. We'll be improving one thing, but then I guess making something else worse.
Yeah.
So our first task was to make sure that we're keeping the line. And then, yes, the next step was to start and making improvements. And we can do that based on the measurements that we get from our logs. We have an internal logging system, and based on things like running SysTrace and based on things like looking at the data from NimbleDroid and sort of seeing where they come together or what major pinpoints all of them are pointing to. And I think it's important to look at more than one source, because one source can sometimes mislead you. If it's SysTrace, you're running it locally on your phone or emulator. If it's some logs, they may not be recording some things. If it's an external service, again, they may only be running on a certain configuration. So taking all of these into account and sort of seeing what things come together to and look bigger than the others.
Right. And are there certain patterns or certain problems that you have noticed that you either keep fixing or that really substantially improved your app?
So the things that we're looking at currently as being probably the biggest gains are things that have to do, I think, globally with all apps in the world and not even, not even Android related. Things like how big are your API calls or how many of them.
What do you mean, how big are your API calls?
How big of a response you're getting. How big is the JSON you're getting back from the server?
Oh, I see. Okay. So the data that you're getting back?
Yeah.
You mean just the time that it takes to then parse that data and consume it? Or the time that it takes to contact the server, or the amount of time it takes
all of these things okay. combined?
Okay. So the local, I always think in terms of local because I'm just not a server guy. But you're saying that that's like small potatoes compared to server interaction stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. And then what do you do? Do you work on like the parsing engine, or do you try to optimize the data payloads that you're doing? Do you do things in smaller chunks?
All of these things. Oh, okay. All of these things combined. Making sure you only get the fields that you are actually needing at the moment and not extra. Making sure that your JSON parsing works as efficiently as possible. Making sure you're not firing off, 10 network requests and waiting for all of them to return before you can continue, if you can defer or batch network calls.
Yeah, no, I was going to ask, what development tools do you use? Build systems and
not
CI
a leading
solutions?
Question
yeah,
at
not
all.
Not leading at all.
Android Studio?
Yes!
I was hoping you were going to say that.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
What release?
We are always trying to be on the latest ones as much as possible.
Latest bleeding nightly build or latest stable?
Latest stable.
All right. Yeah. It's been a while since we released one of those, but we're trying to.
What is latest stable? I thought
2.3.
It was like, yeah,
so,
2.3.
Yeah, right. Sadly. 3.0 is a big release for us, and it's taking a while to get it totally stable. So we released beta 3 or 4 recently, and hopefully we'll be in RC soon and then 3.0.
We've been discussing moving to 3.
Yeah, it's a really, really good upgrade, but a big upgrade. So
it has some pros and cons. We have done a lot of stuff around Gradle and making our builds run as fast as humanly possible because they're slow. And so there are some pros and cons into upgrading.
Yes, I think that the biggest con is that it's hard to upgrade because you have to change a bunch of your build files. The pro is that it should be a lot faster because now you have things like implementation dependencies where there's a lot less recompilationing happening from upstream when you declare a library dependency as implementation only. So there's more performance to gain from 3.0. But again, that upgrade is kind of hard,
is that
depending
also
on what you've done.
Where the new profiler tools were? Was that a 3.0 or was that a 2.3? I can't remember.
I actually think they're in 3.0. Okay. Yeah, they're in 3.0.
Right.
They went into 2.4, but 2.4, 3.0 is the new 2.4.
I was thinking 2.4.
Yeah. We rebranded 2.4 when it got big enough and we added more features and basically made it incompatible because of the Gradle plugin. That's when we said, okay, 3.0.
Well, you said Gradle and I assumed incompatible, so that's fine.
No, I mean, you still can in studio use Gradle 1.0, I think. But when if you want to use the new Gradle plugin, right, then you have to change your build.gradle files.
That was the problem I was showing you on the shuttle last week, where I had created a project with the Canary and it was incompatible because I was running 2.3.
Yeah. So, don't do that.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks. Any other bug requests for Tor, as long as he's here? Any Gradle problems he can solve?
I'm just looking forward to the talk about the internals of Android Studio, because, you know, we're open source too.
Ooh.
And I want to find out, you know, how the IntelliJ indexing system works.
Okay.
I know a little about it, but it'd be great to see a talk.
Actually, so what are you going to do next? So you did a talk. I assume you'll maybe do this again? Or
yes. So
keep working on this?
Yeah. So I'm giving the same talk again for DroidCon New York City and London.
Okay.
And I was thinking, so I have a bunch of other ideas. One of them is to make some adjustments based on O and make sure that things like Activity Manager, I assume, changed a little bit, or there are some changes. And I have some other topic ideas that I would like to introduce for O, then that, again, I know nothing about. Things like how the DOES mechanism works. And after that...
Yeah, and I think didn't we broaden that in O, like the new background restrictions? So yeah, so there's probably some good stuff to cover there. Yeah.
Yes, there's a... From what I understand, it's now a brand new dosing mechanism than the previous ones. And another thing that I understood was that the way instant apps run now is integrated into the operating system, where in previous versions it used to be sort of ad hoc added to existing mechanisms, whereas now it's just like it has its own way of doing it. So that will be interesting to cover. And after that, I will probably try and think of ways to expand on this introduction talk. One area that I would like to focus a lot is the system manager, the system server part.
Yep.
And talk a lot more about the window manager and the activity manager.
Right. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see follow-ons that dove deeper into some of the subdomains.
Yes.
Right. Audience might get smaller, but more engaged. Those are the folks that really want to know the deep down secrets.
I kind of hope that great. if I continue to work specifically on the Activity Manager and the Window Manager, it will still touch base with a lot of app developers, because it is the things that I think are most relevant to them when they write apps, like Activity Lifecycle, for example.
Yep.
Those are things that should be interesting to...
Yeah, definitely. I wonder... So the architecture component stuff that we're wearing, the first part of that is the lifecycle stuff, specifically because it is so important for people to understand that, and so difficult for them to understand exactly how it all works. And so we're trying to simplify that by having this library that does takes care of a lot of the lifecycle stuff correctly for you. It'd be interesting to look at that from the lens of, okay, well, given you know what we know about internally how lifecycles work, what do you need to know about that when using architecture components, or what do you not need to know about it, or why do these things work? So yeah, expanding on that knowledge to sort of explain different parts of the system as well.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, again, starting from a very basic, what you've been taught maybe as a junior Android developer is your app can either be resumed or paused or started or any of these other states, and then trying to really understand why that is and how does it happen, I think could benefit anyone who writes apps, basically.
Cool. I look forward to them. I'll see you at some of those conferences, maybe, and then I'll go to those talks and learn more.
I'll look for the book.
Okay. Yeah, we'll stand at the local bookshelf and we'll just wait for it to arrive. That's probably the most efficient mechanism. All right. Well, anything else to leave us with? What's the secret you've been harboring about the Android platform that you're going to drop on us right now at the end? Ready, go.
Nope. Blank.
Okay. She prefers no comment.
That's fair. All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Thank you.